Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Shimi Isaacs is a South African comedian, writer, actress, and producer. Shimi has obtained an honors degree from AFTA in 2005 and later specialized in a performance technique called The Need at the Black Nexus School of Performance in New York City. In 2006, she returned to South Africa and took up the position of lecturer in the acting department at AFTA Cape Town. Since 2008, she has been a freelance writer, actress, comedian, and producer. She is widely regarded as one of South Africa's talented bilingual actresses and funniest female comedians. Some of her theatre productions and stand-up comedian performances include the 2009 production of Dance Wit Me, the 2011 biographical comedy one-woman show Ali Pat Fanny Worcester, the 2012 House at Mabra, which earns her the Best Newcomer Award at the KKNK Otsun Festival, and the Best Actress Award at the CakeNet Fiestas. In 2014, Shimi is the only South African comedian chosen to represent South Africa at the Comedy Festival in Glasgow, Scotland. In 2016, she performs at the annual Proudly Coloured stand-up comedy show in Johannesburg, South Africa. In 2017, she performs at Voortfest as well as a new stand-up comedy show called Famous. In 2018, she performed at the Kings and Queens of Comedy, as well as the one-woman stand-up comedy show, Mooney. These are just some of the stand-up comedy and theatre production performances that Shimi has performed in. There are a number of more in her repertoire. In front of the camera, she has performed in a number of projects, namely Noom May Skolly, Sarah Sachaheim, Season 2 of Arendsvlei, Dina, Reiki, Magda, Tully's Joburg Diaries, Blood and Water, Unseen, Frankie and Felipe. Again, these are just a number of the projects that Shimi has appeared in front of the camera for, and she has many more in her repertoire. Up next on Celeb Savant to discuss her latest project as creator and producer of Mincy O'Hara and her journey in the entertainment industry is Shimi Isaacs. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in Cape Town, and I'm having a hot cup of coffee.
Shimi, let's take it all the way back to the beginning. So at what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the acting, creative, writing, production world. And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
So let me just start off by saying thank you very much for having me. And I'm going to just from the bat tell you that I was raised in an extremely religious household by my mom.
Okay.
So faith is a big part of who Shimi Isaacs is and who I've become throughout my journey. It's very important to say that where I am today and how I've lived my life is by no means by myself, but by a power greater than myself as well. I was five, Barrett, if I recall the very first memory, or shall I say feeling, that I had. It was a feeling that occurred inside me rather than something I saw and I innately thought, oh, I want to do that. No, absolutely not. I innately felt that I wanted to tell stories, and in what medium that was, it wasn't something I was thinking about, whether it was stage or whether it was film. I wanted to tell stories. And so it is a feeling that I believe was instilled in me. And because neither of my parents were highly educated, I was the product of teenage parents. And so in terms of their schooling, there wasn't a higher tertiary level of education that either of them acquired. And yet they had the foresight to make sure that education became key in my upbringing. I was born in a little town called Worcester. So very little prospects growing up in a small town like that, right? The only prospects you had was becoming a packer at Checkers or doing retail at Mr. Price, which is what I did throughout my schooling, weekends and holidays. You know, I've always worked since I was 13 years old. So a work ethic was instilled in me. So no, irrespective of where I was growing up, again, my parents, as young as they were incredibly smart and they were incredibly good and had heart and had great faith in who I could become, you know. So they really spoke life into me. And that is why I think where I am today is truly because of just the love and the unconditional. My parents were so strong. I mean, you know, my confidence gets confused for arrogance, but that is truly because they believed in me wholeheartedly, and thus I believed in myself. We never went to theater. My parents are not cultural that way. We never went to cinemas. It's not something I was exposed to.
Okay.
So when I'm telling you that it was a feeling,
Yes.
that is truly the only thing I can go on. So I wasn't exposed to something, and then I was like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. No,
Yes, yeah.
I just wanted to perform. And my mother would say that that's what I would do. She would hear me in my bedroom just going off and like talking in tongues, as she called it back then. But I was actually mimicking accents and dialects,
Okay, yeah.
you know. And she would say I
Yeah.
was talking in tongues. And that's truly the birth of my curiosity within the entertainment industry. Again, my parents were extremely surprised when this was an actual career that I wanted to do. And again, you know, both parents had to work. So I'm the eldest of three girls. And so we were left to our own devices a lot of the time. And during those times, it was safe. Let me just put that out there to your listeners. You know, I come from a time where humanity really valued one another. And I was raised not just by my parents, but by an entire community. But being left by your own devices at times where I had to take care of my younger siblings also really forces you to really understand your identity and understand your purpose within that role. And I understood that I was the eldest, therefore I had to make sure my youngest siblings were okay. So to have learned such responsibility at such a young age, I think is quite remarkable. It truly is. You know, some people would look at this and go, oh, shame. They would, no. It's no shame here. As a matter of fact, you want to let your children think for themselves. And
Exactly.
that's the greatest
Yes.
gift I always say my parents did was yes, we had to raise ourselves at times because I come from a two household parents where they both had to work. But that really just gave us such incredible independence, especially as girls, because we were just girls. And my father's motto was that no girl of his was going to need a man to dictate what it is that they need in this world. I am able to change my own car tire. I am able to service my own car because my dad raised me like a boy, and he will tell you that, you know. If anyone who would ask him, he would say, this is my little man boy, you know, my little girl boy. And as a gay woman, I welcome that label. I love that my father raised me that way so that I could stare life in the face in its with all its adversities and truly do what I believe I was meant to do, which is be a storyteller. Don't and I don't have a favorite because I know that's going to be your next question. I don't. I'm a storyteller, whether that's being a stand-up comic, whether that's acting, writing, producing, stage, film, television. That is what I am. I'm an artist of storytelling.
Oh, this is so exciting. So many questions are pouring through to my brain right now. What do you enjoy about acting and being in front of the camera?
Oh wow. I do love that question. My darling. So my very first psychology coach. So I'm an AVDA graduate, okay. And so the reason I decided to do acting and specialize in it was truly because I wanted to understand the human mind and the human psyche, right? And when you study at AVDA, they give you a whole deep dive into human behavior, and that. was something that I was always fascinated by. Mm. Why do human beings, why do we do what we do? Why do we think the way we think, right? And then you break it down and you get into the anatomy of that, right? Which we then would combine with physical theater, or you would do stunts. So I had five majors that I specialized in. I mean, that's insane. No one had five majors. I had five majors because that is how obsessed I was with just the human species and how it is that we think the way we think. And the late Fiona Coyne was my psychology teacher and lecturer. That is why I love acting, because I'm given an opportunity and privilege, I would call it, to truly put myself into the shoes or into the mind of like-minded characters that has walked this planet, even though some of them are fictionalized and some of them are based in reality. I think that for me is the beautiful thing about acting, is that I truly have got the ability to remove myself from something and step into something else. Mm. But even that in itself comes with great honor, because you have to honor the characters that you portray, yeah, whether that is me writing or that is me acting. And you have to, in my, you know, professional artistic perspective, you have to do it as authentically as possible. And that requires great detail. And that requires great tolerance for the very thing and the very people that are not like you. And I think actors in this world, we are one of the most compassionate beings to ever walk this planet, because we understand people's pain and trauma, because we've had a short little insight into what it could potentially feel like to be like that.
When you're portraying a character that is going through a trying time, or has challenges, or going through perceived negative spaces or emotions, like the villain, or has had an injury, or different kind or type of loss, or a tsunami, for example, or things that you, Shimi, personally have not as yet experienced in your space, how do you wash that energy off you at the end of the day once you finish portraying the character, for your body to know that that was the character and separate to Shimi's experiences?
Well, I think first and foremost, you must understand that what you're doing is a job. Okay, I'm no magician. I'm no psychologist. What I am is an actress.
Yes.
And I think you have to have that understanding first. You know, when I used to lecture, I've had a lot of actors that would come to me and say, oh, I can use my acting to solve my own personal trauma. And I would stop you and say, oh, no, darling. No. That's a very dangerous psychological line you are towing. But what it is that we do is simply creating, okay? Now, however, you might have gained tools throughout the process of understanding acting that you can apply in your own life. But that is, again, I would advise you, my love, if you're sitting with innate trauma, that you talk to someone that's a professional.
Yeah.
So that those things do not merge, and that there is no confusion into who you are and the job you have to do as the artist.
Yes.
That would be the first thing I would say. Right. Now, the other thing is, when it comes to playing a character that is so far removed from you, who you are, I would advise you to don't forget why you got into this business. Okay. That is what turns me on as an artist, is when I'm sitting with such a complex character. Now, I might not have experienced the exact situation that the character has, but I guarantee you I've experienced something close to that, if not something exactly like that. However, the circumstances might have not been the same, but the outcome was the feeling, the emotion.
Yes.
What did I personally feel? Right. And that's why we call it things that you can draw from your life, because it's things that you might have either dealt with or not even, right? Mm. However, as long as you are able to remain that barrier of artist, okay, and the real world, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You have to operate, for me personally, I have to operate like that. Otherwise, my work is not authentic.
Okay.
And when it comes to a villainous character, you've got to find something in that character that you love. Because we're dealing with people. He was a person before we were all people before we started acting. And what I mean by acting is before we started walking,
Yeah.
before we started crawling, before we started speaking, right? Before personality came in, before our character began began to walk. That's what I refer to within human life. The exact same thing with a character that you might not agree with, politically, religiously, whatever the case may be. Okay, if you love what you do, which is what I do, I don't judge. You cannot be in this business and judge. There's a time and place for applying your own personal view to things, and then there's a time and place to just be an artist.
Yes.
Just be an artist. And that's what I would say on that, you know, but every artist has got their own process. So what works for me might not work for Barrett, and what works for Barrett might not work for Shimmy. However, Barrett and I will still get to the same destination. It's the how
Yes.
that is that has its own personal journey. But please, to any listener here, stay clear from trying to diagnose yourself.
So this next point is quite controversial and it's up for discussion and debate.
I love controversy, darling. Bring it on.
So there are different points of views. I'm also part of the LGBTQ plus community. I'm also Jewish. And now you have these scenarios whereby actors are portraying roles outside of their labels. So for example, Bradley Cooper portrayed Leonard Bernstein and there was an uproar because how can a non-Jewish person play a Jewish person? Or when a straight person portrays a gay person, people are saying, oh no, it can't be because it shouldn't be like that. So there's this thing happening the last couple of years or few years around actors' portrayal of labels or characters that are outside of what they are in real life. I'm sure you've heard a lot of discussion and debate around this. So, what are your thoughts and observations of what's been happening?
Well, first, honey, let me tell you, I've been gay a very long time, darling. Okay. I am the Madiba of lesbians, honey. Okay. Like I always say, I am your ancestor, honey. Okay. I remember my very first protest alongside Zaki Ahmed in the 90s. I'd come to Cape Town in 99. But I remember that very clearly. And what I will add to that is, you know, we used to protest for things that truly matter. And I mean that because we were protesting that every single person who was not elitist have access to the HIV medication. Right, so Zaki Ahmed was seen as an elite, and at that time, the Magic Johnsons of the world, they were the only people that had access to the HIV medications. And it took a gay man to say, no, I will not take my medication until every single person who doesn't look like me or sound like me or have the status that I have got access to medication. We walked for humanity. We didn't walk for a label.
Okay.
Okay, and this is very important what I'm going to say because I'm very clear on where I stand on this issue. We have alienated a lot of our allies with our rhetoric that is nonsensical. It is complete nonsensical. And it is a debate that I choose not to always debate because, again, it is nonsensical. Nothing that they are debating has got any kind of impact to how society will flourish as a society as a whole. Okay. Bradley Cooper is a damn artist and a damn fine one at that. I am an exceptional artist. I don't walk around saying, where are the lesbian roles? Because I'm a writer myself. I enjoy exploring things that I am not. That is the whole point of acting, is to explore something you are not. Something you are not. Now, any gay man can put their hand up and play straight. That has happened. I've worked with many a gay people. Same here in my position. You don't see straight people putting up their hand and saying, why Shimmy Isaacs always playing a straight woman or this? No, we don't get that. So I think what needs to happen is, honey, put your money where your mouth is. Go to them acting classes, okay? Do the voice work that we've done. I hold a master's degree. because I specialize in what it is that I do. Bradley Cooper specializes in what it is that he does. We didn't just wake up and say, you know what, I think I'm going to be a surgeon today. No, darling. We actually specialize. Yeah. This is the whole point of what acting is. This is the craft. This is the core of acting. This is the core of it. We are having nonsensical debates while people are losing their actual lives. And that's what we need to focus on. Let's focus on what's going on in Uganda, of our brothers and sisters being jailed, being murdered. Yeah. That, to me, is an actual debate we need to have. Exactly. What role Bradley Cooper decided to play. No, man, don't waste my time.
Oh, I love this. We're getting all passionate and excitable. Now let's move into your latest project that is currently on Showmax. What is it called? What is it about? What is your role within the show? Tell us everything.
You know how to take me from like a to a come down, and I'm going to take you there, Baba. In the short time, I feel like you and I've been best friends.
Yes.
Listen. So the title changed towards the last year that I was finishing off the final draft. Okay. It's a story about my mom and about my childhood, so to speak, growing up with a mother who was a hairdresser, who was a factory worker and then quit that job to pursue her dream of being a hairdresser. And it all started out of our kiddie's room, you know, where my mother would do people's hair out of our bedroom. At the time, we were two girls before my baby sister arrived. And so my middle sister and I, we're just a year and a half apart. So, you know, we would have to get up early Saturday mornings because there was an auntie like tapping by the window like, hello, Frida, hello. Listen, are you still going to touch me up? Now? And so, you know, and then you had my dad who was the only man in the house filled with women. You know, now it wasn't just the woman in his life, it was the neighborhood's woman all coming for the hair.
Yeah.
And when my dad bought our first house, I think he had the garage for one day and then it turned into my mother's salon. And so that's how her business then kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a story that I've been sitting with for so many years because most of, well, actually all of my writing projects from stage to television have been extracts out of my life, out of things that I've experienced. You know, I'm quite a biographical writer, I would say, whether it's comedy, drama, or a thriller sort of genre, they all have extracts out of my life, just in different phases to where I was as a child, as a young girl. And so, you know, this was a story I've always wanted to tell. And then, when Hrabkas came along, this was in 2018, it was still part of CakeNet at the time. They put out this sort of submissions for like comedy. And at this point, I was only writing for myself. So I'd had a lot of solo shows and I was extremely successful in them. But I was then ready to make the transition to actually commit to my writing and write for television. And I had submitted two. I'd submitted Frida, it was called at the time, and I'd submitted another sitcom. So, and both actually made it. They were both chosen. They were both in the finals. And I ultimately had to settle on one, and it was Frida, which is my mom's name that I settled on. And we were very happy about that. And so we then did the pilot, and I played Julia because what I decided to do was give Frida a best friend. Now, in the real story, that didn't exist. However, for the purposes of comedy, and once you understand how the sitcom sort of genre works, you know what makes a sitcom sort of format work, which is give him a best friend. So we had to do that. However, my mom had really good friends in her life. So it was easy for me to just bring that in as a character, right? And that's what I enjoyed. I think, you know, yes, there was the biographical aspect of it. And then there was the taking the creative license and really making the characters that was existential in our real life, bringing them into the house, you know, with the neighbor and then Jodie obviously represents me, the daughter, sort of my viewpoint, because I was the weird kid. I was their weird child. I went to the, you know, we went to the best schools, I must say that. with the little they had, they send us to the best private schools. And so my comedy humor, I don't know if you can see it through Jody, I have the best of both worlds. I was growing up in the hood, I say, and I was growing up in a white world, you know. I was the kid, if you wanted to know something. No, 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 listen, the white people do that. It's fine. I know them. They're my friends. So now the name is called Manchihara.
Okay.
Because again, I think once it got shelved by CakeNet, and this was after COVID, so we must just add that. It was after COVID, and I knew that there were going to be some cutbacks and things like that. And at this point, I had already started a new series that I was writing for the SABC. And this is where faith is important. Once I got the call that, listen, financially, we can't. I said to my business partner and writer at the time, Tristram Atkins, who was obviously a little bit more, you know, in energy than me. I said, no. Sometimes when God intervenes, because this was a spiritual intervention. I felt it in my spirit. I said, sometimes when God pauses something, it is because the timing is just not right. Trust me, Tristram. The timing isn't right. Because this needs to be seen by every person who matters. And I needed to grow. I was busy growing as a writer in this particular time. I was so at peace, Barrett, when they said, we're shelving it. I said, okay. Okay, then. Right on. See you soon. Don't know when, but see you soon.
Yeah.
And I continued writing other shows. I had finished a feature for Gambit. I had written a series for the SABC, I'd written another series for Amazon. So I was really growing and I was doing beautiful film work. I was, you know, creating Unseen season one on Netflix. I was really flourishing as a writer and as an actress in during this time. And then when I got the call last year that Showmax wants to pick this up, I was ready. You know, and then you're just like, but of course, I was just full of, I was like, but of course, man, what took you so long? Let's go. Because I was ready.
Yeah.
Because now I'm not just stepping into this project as a writer and creator, but as a producer. And when you step into a producing capacity, that title in itself requires immense skill when it comes to working with human beings, because a producer's job essentially is to manage people, right? And to manage their behaviors and their emotions. And yes, there are the technical side and the admin to it, but it essentially is, I need to get this group of ensemble people to work together smoothly. And I was ready for that. And I did myself so proud. I did myself so proud because I think how we treat human beings in this world is important.
Yep.
And I wanted to create an environment with this show. Yes, it was a comedy show, but it was a South African story. Yes, it happens to be about brown people, but this is a South African story. It's not a colored story. It's not a story just about hair. It's a story about people, relationships, friendships, and community, yep, and South Africanism.
When you go into writing a series, you mentioned comedy, drama, stage. Do you know going in what format it will take? Or is it part of a brief from the outside world or space that influences that? Or how do you know when you start writing something where it'll be seen? Or does it unfold as you are writing and creating?
Well, I think in my case, I do start off with a vision. I think having a vision is important, right? I definitely start off with a plan. The other thing is, I don't hold on to that plan.
Okay.
I think that is important to add is, as an artist, I know that things change. It's evident. It changes from the page to the words in the actor's mouth. The moment the words are lifted from the page, it changes shape. It changes dynamic. That is the process of this particular art form that we are in. And I think once you can understand that and accept that, it is easier for me to go, this is the intention. that I have, but let's see what you can offer. Let's see where it can go. I think for me as a creator, especially as a producer, I've allowed my director to step in, David Isaacs, who's so wonderful. I've allowed him to step in, and he'll tell you, I have absolutely no, I wanted the actors to work with the director because they, A, are professional. They know what they're doing. I don't need to have a heavy hand there. However, where I did have a very stern hand was how this would look visually. That was key because I was talking about a community that I grew up in, and we need to honor these people by how they look, and we have to honor them by how beautiful they are. So those were key elements where I applied focus. You understand? So trust is key in this game. You've got to trust the team that you've hired. You've got to trust them. And then you also have to know how to lead the other team on the other side. And so leadership was required there. And that's where my energy went into. How am I going to lead my visual team, right? Because I'm working with people who are not Afrikaans, who doesn't come from a small town. So it was important that I create a clear vision for them as to what it is that we needed and what it is that we were representing, because we were representing the Boland, not Cape Town. Because a lot of the times when it comes to brown stories, the perception is they must be from Cape Town. No, darling, this is a Boland story. So we've got a very key cultural differences that needs to be highlighted.
Absolutely. If you go from one town to the next in South Africa, it's a different culture, different experience, different nuances, different journey of interactions with the people who are living in those spaces. And that's the beauty of it. Exactly.
Exactly. Let me be your translator, darling, is what I would say.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So, as a final message, what would you like to say?
You know what? Nothing makes me more proud than being South African. It truly doesn't. And if it was it was an iconic moment I had. I was 24. I had just wrapped up my honors, and I'd moved with my girlfriend at the time to New York, and she was American. And I remember I wanted the whole Hollywood life. I mean, I was going to make my life in New York. We were living there, and I had signed up at an acting school called Black Nexus at the time. It's a show created by Susan Batson, and I specialized in a very specific acting technique there. But I was about to make my life there. I was going to go for it. There was a disconnect, and I remember walking down the streets there in Chinatown, Canal Street. It's around the corner where I study. And man, and I was having a moment, and I looked around, and I'm like, I have no connection. I have no foundation. Like, I felt so disconnected from this world. And somehow I instinctively knew that A, my relationship was probably going to come to an end after 5 years, and I was going to return home because I had nothing to offer this country. I'm South African. My country needed me, and I needed to come home and write the stories that needed writing. And it was probably one of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make in my life. Was to walk away from a love that I knew, and to walk away, and to walk, sorry, towards a love that I was starting to have a relationship with, which was my citizenship, which was my South Africanism. And that's the last word I want to leave. Yes, we have people listening from across the globe, but love yourself with all your flaws. With all the things you think you don't have, no one is better than us. That's the thing that I came to understand at such a young age, because we constantly are looking at America for answers and for identity. We are constantly doing that. And I decided, no, I love who I am. It's time to teach people about who we are. And that's why I write. I write what I like, in the name of Steve Biko.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.